Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahadiryam Karabhavahai, Tejasvinavatitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Okay, we're on the last two verses of this first chapter, the third section. These last two verses are called praise, stuti. It often comes at the end of the section. So let's look at verse 26. Nachiketam upakhyanam, Nachiketam upakhyanam, Mrityuproktam sanatanam, Mrityuproktam sanatanam, Uktva shrutva cha medhavi, Uktva shrutva cha medhavi, Brahmaloke mahiyate,
Brahmaloke mahiyate.
Okay. Everybody can hear me? Jackie, can you hear me? Now I've come on there.
Did you log her out of the other meeting?
No, I'm not logged out, and I'm here as the host on this one without any.
She's not in the other meeting.
I'm in this one. Let's see if anybody hears me. Oh, sound is fine here? Okay, sorry. Some other strange things are here. If sound is fine, that's great. I'll just continue. Sorry about that. Okay, good. Nachiketam upakhyanam. Nachiketam nachiketasa praptam means that which was gained by Nachiketas. What was that? Upakhyanam. Upakhyanam is the story, but in this case it means the whole story of the Katha Upanishad is that discussion between Lord Yama and Nachiketas. And so it starts out in the very first chapter, the first section, telling the whole story of how it came to be that Nachiketas even met Lord Yama, Lord Death. But then after that, it becomes After the three boons have been granted, and Lord Yama becomes very pleased with Nachiketas, he starts to teach him. That's all part of the story. Okay. So what they say here is that this teaching that was gained by Nachiketas, Nachiketam for Sanskrit students is a tadita, means that which was gained by or that which belongs to, it has different meanings, but here it means Nachiketasa praptam, that which was gained, that which is obtained by Nachiketas, gained by Nachiketas. Upakhyanam, this teaching, Mrityu praptam, which was taught by Mrityu, by Lord Yama. Okay? So this teaching gained by Nachiketas, which is Mrityu praptam, taught by Mrityu. Sanatanam, which itself is eternal. And here the eternality is called apekshika nityatvam. It's an eternality means that with every cycle of the creation, because it's Vedic, these Upanishads, including Katha Upanishad, come into manifestation. Right? So from beginningless time, this particular Upanishad will manifest over and over and over again from beginningless time. It's sanatana. So it's eternal, it's not timeless. Timeless is Brahman. So eternal means it continues from a cycle to cycle to cycle of the creation, sanatana. Now he says, so this eternal or beginningless Upanishad taught by Mrityu to Nachiketas and gained by Nachiketas, he says this now. Uktwa and Uktwa Shrutwa cha Medhavi. First of all, let's take Shrutwa. Shrutwa means, according to what our Shankara says, this. Shrutwa acharyebhyah. Having learned this from the acharyas, from the teachers, from the gurus, having learned this, then uktwa, and having taught it to the brahmanas. Brahmanas are, you don't have to take that as yourself being a brahmana in the traditional sense that you were born as a brahmana or a kshatriya. Brahmana means predominantly sattva. That your antakarna is predominantly sattva, predominantly has enough shanti to be a mumukshu, to be able to receive this teaching. So brahmana here, so we say uktwa, this is from the bhasha. So shrutwa, having gained this knowledge from the teacher, from your teacher, and having taught it, the medhavi, Swamiji in his commentary on this says, the medhavi is something, you know, that we pray for, like when we do the Dakshinamurti Stotram, may we have, or the Dakshinamurti prayer, may we have medha shakti. Medha shakti means, may we have memory. So may we gain this knowledge, may we have jnanam, but may we also have medha, so that that knowledge is available for us in words as we need it. There's a famous story in the Mahabharata where Karna, who was on the side of Duryodhana, was a great archer and had so many capacities as a warrior, but he was given a curse. You know, these weapons that they would have, astras and shastras, often, almost always, they go along with a mantra. And so when you're using a particular weapon, there's a mantra that goes with it. And so what would happen with Karna is he had all of these mantras, every skill and every weapon, and I knew all of the mantras, but they would not come to mind when he needed them. That was a curse. And so medha shakti, when we pray for medha shakti, may that knowledge be available to us in words when we need it. In words, as Swamiji in his commentary will say, like, for jnani, you don't need words anymore because yourself is here. Just like I don't have to look at this and say, it's a lamp, in order for me to recognize it as a lamp. We don't need the words. But what if I want to tell you what it is? Or contextualize this. I need a word for it. But what if I don't have the word? So it's the same with knowledge. If you're going to be gaining knowledge, you need the words. If you're going to be teaching also this knowledge, you need the words. To have the words, you need that medha shakti, so that the knowledge that enters is something that you retain, right? And so he says, uktva shrutva cha, having shrutva, this is another little thing, Shrutva comes from shru. Shru literally means to listen. So we say, having listened to this teaching, right? Having listened to the acharyas, shravana is listening. And so the listening is the receiving of the teaching. The teacher can be teaching, right? The teacher can be giving out the knowledge, but if you're not listening, yes, it's not being received. And so in order for you to gain this knowledge, the teacher, of course, has to be able to teach it, but it actually has to come in to your mind. To come into your mind, you have to be listening. So shravana, it's interesting because we say the sadhanas are for gaining this knowledge. The upayanishta is shravana, manana, nididhyasana. That can be confusing.
Is that you? The backup again.
Oh, yeah.
vanishing.
Yeah. Yeah. But we don't need it.
Is that lucky? I can't.
It looks like Inshwita. Okay. So the Shravana, it's just interesting, you know, because Shruti means also that which is heard. Right? Shruti, because it comes from the same root. So when we talk about the transmission of this teaching, it's the flow into the ears of the student, which then comes out of the mouth of the teacher into the ears of the student who becomes a teacher, comes out of the flow. So think of Shravana as the receiving of this knowledge. When we say Shravana, Shrutva, having received this knowledge through your ears, right? So having gained this, having listened, having gained this knowledge, and then having told, Uptva, Shrutva, the Medhavi is that jnani, that person who has gained this knowledge, this timeless knowledge, as taught by Mithu and gained by Nachiketas, that Medhavi is someone who is Brahmaloke Mahiyate, who gains greatness, is one way of saying it, gains greatness in Brahmaloka. Brahmaloka, so we have to just look at what this means. Another way, what Swamiji will say, reveling in Brahman, he attains greatness. But what is meant by it is that reveling in Brahman means I've recognized my own being, I have the antakarana shuddhi, and my mind is basking or reveling in the ananda of myself. There aren't any longer any obstacles to that because the antakarana shuddhi is complete. Now when that's the case, that person becomes, as that maturity takes place in this knowledge, becomes beloved by all beings. The Mahatma becomes beloved by all beings. You can say like that. Becomes great because beloved. Becomes beloved because the self of the Mahatma is yourself. So when you're around a teacher who has that maturity, I always, of course, think of Swamiji because he really was a Mahatma, really was a living embodiment of that. You feel like you're with somebody who knows you more than you know yourself. You feel so completely seen because there's nothing in the way. You're completely seen because yourself is their self and there's nothing obstructing it. And so the attraction, the attraction, they say like moths to a flame, that type of attraction is there because it's really, you can say it's an attraction to the Mahatma, but it's not really. It's an attraction to your being, you know? And there's nothing between the upadis, there's nothing between the two upadis that are making some sort of a curtain between you and the teacher who has that level of maturity. And so Swamiji was like yourself walking around. You know? You did have that level of maturity. And so here what it says, that Medhavi, you know, having gained this knowledge that is taught in the story of Nachiketas, the knowledge which Nachiketas, God, as taught by Lord Yama, that comes in every, it's cyclically through every, and is there in every creation to be gained. He says, that Medhavi, Mahiyate, gains greatness in Brahmaloka. You hear Brahma Eva Lokaha, Brahman which is the Loka. Brahman which, Loka means that which is experienced, it's a Loka. So we say that there's seven Lokas up and seven Lokas down. There's seven worlds of experience up and seven down, the seven Lokas there are. But this is Brahmaloka. This is a different type of Loka. This is the Loka which is Brahman, the experience which is Brahman itself. And so the one who revels in Brahmaloka is the one who revels in Brahman. It's not a Loka. It's not a Loka like the seven Lokas up and the seven Lokas down. It's the Adhishtana Loka, the Loka which is ever present as your being. So Shankara says here, that Loka which is Atma Bhuta, whose nature is your own self. So the Brahmaloka is Atma Atmaloka, and that Atma, Atma Bhuta, Upasyaha, is something which is fit to be worshipped, and therefore Upasya. It's fit to be worshipped, and then therefore Mahiyate. It is considered. It gains that majesty, that greatness. We don't just worship anything. If something is upasya, is fit to be worshipped, it's because it is essentially what we seek. You know? Worship what we seek in this context. And we seek ourselves. And so when somebody is the embodiment of the truth of your being, then you naturally gravitate toward that. You know? The great dukkha in the world, this whole sukha dukkha that we suffer from in the world, is that we superimpose our ananda on things that don't, on that which does not deserve it, okay? And that which cannot take you to Brahman. At least if you project your ananda on the Mahatma, because the Mahatma isn't giving out anything else really. So it's like yourself is sitting there, you're experiencing yourself outside of yourself, you know. And so it's very easy to have that tremendous projection, which can cause you a great deal of pain because the ananda is still out there for you. But the person who has the Mahatma, who has that ananda, shrutva, having gained that knowledge, uptva, being able to teach it, ends up being able to hold up a mirror to yourself, so that you yourself gain that ananda which you're so enamored with, you're so in love with, in all the objects in the creation that light it up. The one they say, the benign, the only benign desire, really, is the desire for moksha. That's a benign desire. We say benign because you still have to go through all of the pain that desire causes. You know? But most desires, you go through all of that pain, but that doesn't amount to anything. You go through all of the suffering, and then you have some moments of well-being, but it doesn't resolve. It just leaves you in the dust. It leaves you in the lurch, really. But this desire, even though it can be very, very painful at times because it's being thwarted, or you can't get to the class, or you don't understand something, or you can't have the conversation you need to have with your teacher. There's so many things that cause so much angst in this way or that way or this way or that way. It doesn't really matter at all, because that those desires resolve into the satchit ananda, the truth of your being. And that's where the ananda is located anyway. So a desire for ananda that is projected is never going to work out very well for you. You know, your vairagya works out well. Allowing objects to be as they are, allowing yourself to love the objects or love the people, but have them the freedom to come and go. That works out well. But the desire, as we mean it, is what we call a binding desire. A binding desire means I need that to be happy. Yeah. And the thing is, whenever I project myself onto something, I need that so that I can be happy. Because myself has been projected out there. And then it's hard, you know, for me to be at peace when myself is out there somewhere. Then I have to do everything I can to get it and go through all of the stress and strain of that. And then, of course, be disappointed in the end because the ananda never was there in the first place. Right? So all desires lead to vairagya, I would say. All your desires lead to vairagya, lead to that recognition of the viveka vairagya, all of the qualities of a, you know, of a mumukshu. And then they're dumped and left behind in the end. But the thing is, the commitment or the burning desire for moksha, the burning desire to gain this knowledge, the burning desire that the love that you have for your teacher and all these different things that go on within this world, the world of the mumukshu, those all resolve in your own ananda, which gives moksha. So that's why this medhati, who having been taught, shravana means they've been taught the shruti as a pramana according to tradition, and they say shrutva, It taught them the pramana according to the Vedas, following the Vedas. Then Uktva, being a teacher, teaching them that person is beloved because they're not different from the self that they're teaching about. That's the. And so this is, Shankara introduces this verse, which comes the last two verses of this section. He says, Prastuta vijnana stutyartam aha. He says, for the sake of praising this knowledge, which is under discussion, right? The Shruti tells this verse. You know, just to bring more, there's always going to be verses in the Upanishads that try to excite you about studying the Upanishad and giving you a great value for it. You know, the Shruti itself will always be giving some sort of stuti, some sort of praise. So let's do this last verse, which is also the same type of praise. Ya imam paramam guhyam, ya imam paramam guhyam, shravaye trammasam sadi, prayata shraddha kaleva, prayata shraddha kaleva, taranantjaya kalpate, taranantjaya kalpate. And it says again, Tadananjaya kalpate. No, it goes, Tadananjaya kalpata iti. Tadananjaya kalpata iti. Often they repeat the last line when they come to the end of a section. That's what's happening there. So, yaha imam paramam guhyam shravayet brahmasam siddhi prayataha Shraddha kale va, tad anantjaya kalpate, tad anantjaya kalpate iti. So this one says, he who yaha imam paramam guhyam, this imam paramam, most exalted guhyam, secret, that which is the most hidden. This most exalted, most hidden knowledge, shravayet, the one who causes others to listen to this, shravayet is causal, the one who makes other people listen to this, or teaches them, is the idea. He causes others to listen to this, which is most exalted, and which is the hidden, it's the great, most exalted secret that there is. It's absolutely hidden because it's the self of the seeker. You know, so it's hidden there in the seeker. And it is the most exalted paramam. There's nothing greater than this jnanam. There's nothing greater that can be known. It's paramam. And it's also not available for you to know. With your sense organs and looking around in the world trying to find something, trying to find out what's going to give me this sense of absolute well-being or all is well with me, it's not something that I can find, it's something that I am. But my sense organs and my mind, which are based upon the sense organs in certain terms of knowledge, are all directed out, which will be the next beautiful verse, famous verse that he teaches. All the sense organs are directed outward, right? All of the vrittis in our mind, everything directed outward. And so none of them, all of them enjoy me as their adhishtanam, but the knowledge that's coming in is always of something else. Right? And so I'm the very self of the seeker. So he says, the one who brings, who causes others to know this great secret, this knowledge, which is the greatest secret, where Brahma samsiddhi, within us an assemblage of brahmanas. Right? So now say, here I am teaching this to this assembly of brahmanas. Assembly of brahmanas, because mumukshus are brahmanas. You can't really be a mumukshu without having predominant sattva. So the mumukshus are going to be, the ones that are being taught this are going to be brahmanas in the full sense of the word. Because if that mumuksha, if the sattva isn't dominant, they won't be interested, basically. There won't be the interest there. Some people are more sattva, some people are less sattva. You know, but there has to be a dominance, predominance of sattva in order to be available for this knowledge. So he says, the one who causes others to listen to this in an assembly of brahmanas, means at the mumukshus, or, he says, prayettaha, that one who causes others to listen to this, shraddhakale, prayettaha means having gone through purificatory rites, at the time of shraddha. Shraddha is when every year you do a ceremony on the date of the death of your parents. There'll be a ritual that's done on that date. And during that ritual, then there'll be a feast, and the people will be invited to partake of that feast and to participate in that ritual. And so at that time, so either for the one who is teaching to an assemblage of brahmanas, or at the time of shraddha, when you're, it's not shraddha, it's shraddha, when you're doing this ritual, the anniversary of the person who has died, then at that time, those who are there listening, they become kalpate, they become fit for anantjaya. Anantjaya means moksha. They become qualified, fit for moksha. They gain that blessing. And so this is again another shruti that says it again, tad anantjaya kalpate iti. They become qualified, those ones that are there, being served at the shraddha. They become qualified, fit for moksha. They gain what they need in order to get moksha. This is another stuti. It's another praise. And this one, this type of praise often comes, so it's almost like now that you've learned or learning this Upanishad, you must pass it on. You know, it's giving a value to you to pass it on, and the blessings that you get not only from receiving this knowledge but from passing it on. So you see it in many Upanishads and Prakarana Granthas, something that is the giving praise to make you feel blessed and important, and what an honor it is to get this knowledge and how important it is to pass it on and to pass on this blessing. So it's just part of the very tradition. It's very deep in the Vedic tradition to do that type of different type of stuti. So with that, he ends this particular section, and now we're going to go into another section, which is really, really wonderful section. He starts out, I'm not going to do it, we'll do it next time, but I'm going to talk about a couple of things now. I'll record them all. This is the verse where he says, when Bhagwan created the creation, he made all the sense organs looking outwards. So then how to know the self? That's a problem.
How what?
How to know yourself? All the sense organs, all your means of knowledge are looking outward. What was he thinking? He didn't make a sense organ looking inward. So now we're all stuck.
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Torture.
So this is it's a beautiful chapter. So.
Oh, that's good.
We'll do that later. I wanted to just share something with us. It's something I realized about Swamiji, and when I was thinking about Lucky, and I think it's just such, so I thought I'd just talk about it for 10 minutes or something, just to share it so it's out there. You know, with plants or with animals, and then you go higher up on the scale to humans, you know. One thing about animals is that they're your responsibility, they're your duty to take care of them, and they're so loyal. Like babies are like that too. They can cry and do all kinds of things, but the love is so much that it's you have them, that's your duty to take care of them. It's just what it is. It's no question about it. And also, they don't make problems for you. You know, they're always, little babies are like that too. They become problematic later. When they're little babies, they don't really make problems for you. They just win your heart. You know, out of their love and their loyalty and all that, they win your heart. And so it's easy to care for them. And like for Lucky, it's easy for those of us who know him, what we want is to give him the best possible life. I actually don't want to make him live any longer than his prarabdha. But if there's something happening that's shortchanging his prarabdha a little bit, then our prayers and things can help, or our prayers can make him have the best life possible. And so that's what I want, and I have the energy for that, to just do whatever we possibly can to let him have the best life possible, that he's cared for, that we look after him and all that. I am completely on board for that. That's all I want. I don't mind that if he dies in 3 months or 5 months or 5 years or whatever it is. That's fine. That's fun on. We're all going to die. Okay. But what I realized is that in terms of animals, I have much more maturity than I do in terms of humans. Because humans are not so devoted, you know? Mm-hmm. They're not so devoted. They're not always on your side. They're always not always wagging their tail, you know, when you come in the room. They're not always happy to see you. They're complex. Humans are complex. They have their own needs and their own hurts and their own pains, and so they're not always there in service to you. Okay. So when I was thinking about this, what I realized in my years with Swamiji is that he was toward all beings as I am toward Lucky, toward animals. He is toward all beings. And I was thinking, I was just realizing, just in my mind, going over kind of the past, and how that used to drive some of us absolutely mad, absolutely crazy. Because what it would mean, and Swamiji explained sometimes in class, not really referring to himself, but just so that we would understand, because I'm sure that a lot of people were driven totally crazy by this. But it was kind of like this. In the ashram, when Swamiji would run these 3-year courses, which he would have really a hard time getting other people to do that. He would ask, you know, would you want to do this? And like Paramartanand and others, so they'd say, Swamiji, you can do it. I cannot. I can't do it. Because it's so much. You know, you have 60 people there and all the guests and everything. And then they're living there and going through so much, you know, and this knowledge, it just churns up so many things. And then Swamiji is kind of the guru. He's the teacher there that's receiving all of the problems and all the projections and all these things. And then there would be different people who were given certain positions, like the person who was the head of the kitchen, the person who was the manager, the person who took care of all the construction. Everybody, there are certain people there that had their jobs, certain jobs, and we all had certain jobs, in fact. But there were certain people that were in authority who, you know, were really rakshasas. They were really hard to deal with and used to make everybody suffer so much, you know. But, you know, with Swamiji, if you're on the train, you're on the train. You know, you got on the train, we're all going on. And so he expected, what Swamiji always expected, was that he's with each person, each flower, each animal, and each human, you know, on a one-on-one basis. Guru Sisha. Fully that way. And so it was never, if I let you do that, you can't do it. If I let you do that, then this person would want to do it too. You know? Nothing like that. It was always one-on-one within a group, you know? And sometimes one of the people who was had an authoritative position was really, really mean or really hard to deal with. But Swamiji would never fire them or get rid of them. And that meant that we all had to suffer because he wouldn't put them in another position. And they would be sometimes really torturous type of, you know, angry, mean people. But we all had to suffer, you know. And that used to make me really annoyed, you know. Really, it was, it's not fair. This is not fair, you know, that we all have to suffer this person, you know. Because the person had a lot of issues, and everybody knew it, and yet we had to deal with the person. They had so many issues and made so many people miserable. Some people were, anyway, it went on and on.
Okay.
And there were many instances of this over that 20, 30 year period. And from Swamiji's perspective, if I can put it in any kind of words, he wouldn't think about it like that at all. He wouldn't think about, oh, my keeping this person in this situation, you know, is a problem for these other people. He wouldn't think like that. He would think that, oh, well, we'll all handle this problem. This is our collective problem. And he wouldn't even maybe say the word problem, you know, but this is something that we're all part of our, you know, what we're doing. Not that he's the boss and he should remove that person and then we can all live happily ever after, because now this big problem person is there. And so I just, you know, over the years, I just noticed him handling a whole array of people. Not that we're not all problems. Every one of us is a problem in some way or another. But some problem people are outside of the normal range. Like
Trump.
What I used to tell my clients about whether or not to take, they should consider taking medication, you know, I would say, and then wasn't just me saying, it's just some things that we would look at. Everybody has a range of between sukha and dukkha, you know. So they have this range that we kind of swing through, you know. And if you're within that normal range, you can survive. It's not like you're meant to always be happy. There's a normal swing. But then there are some of us who are outside that normal range, right? And then that suffering becomes too much for a person. And even on the manic level, it becomes too much, you know, because of that mania can be a problem also. The normal range is fine, but when you're in that extreme range, it's very, very difficult. It's difficult for yourself. And it's difficult for others also because you're outside of the normal range, and then they have to find a way to deal with that, right? But for Swamiji, he would see all of that, but he didn't have any feeling not to deal with it. And so he would also assume that's how we all felt. And if we didn't all feel that way, then we had some growing to do. And so he never, in my mind for years, he never took responsibility.
Yeah, he wasn't involved.
Yeah, he never took responsibility for having these tyrants, you know. But the thing, but it's kind of hard for me to explain this. I don't feel I'm doing the best job. But who were these tyrants? Were not tyrants to him, you know. They had issues, but his attitude toward those people with their issues was one of just, how can I help? Even without words, it's just, how can I help? And in reference to everybody else, it would be, how can we help? You know? It wasn't that, how can we get rid of this person so you can all be happy? See, that's the thing. How can we get rid of this person or that person so we can all be happy? No, it's how can we all help? Yeah. And that's like when Swamiji would say things like, your heart has to be as big as Ishwara. You know, that's true. Your heart has to be as big as Ishwara. That's just incredible growth. I mean, I'm just moving along with that, like we all are. We're moving along, you know, becoming bigger and bigger and bigger. Because actually, to the degree that you don't become that big, your heart suffers from different levels of isolation. Because say you're the whole creation, or this whole thing is your body, but this part you have to keep away. That's isolation, right? There's different levels of isolation. And so that's uncomfortable, you know? And so somehow you have to come to terms with all of that, you know, so that you can be like I am with Lucky, where you just want to make things the best that you can, you know, for the flowers and the plants and the animals and the human beings. And it's easier the lower, farther away from yourself you get, you know, in some respects. In other respects, maybe you don't have that sensitivity and just stomp on flowers. Swamiji wouldn't ever pick a flower, and he saw little ants as little beings. And so he was very, very sensitive to that. When you never felt like he was being phony or anything, they were little beings. So when you're around them, around Swamiji, you would see them as little beings also. Because when he's seeing them as little beings, then that's contagious, and you see them as little beings. You see flowers as something that beautiful flowers. Why on earth would you pick the flower, the beautiful flower, and end its life? Why would you even do that? You never consider doing something like that. Even though in India we pick all so many flowers for puja, you wouldn't, you know? You wouldn't. Yeah, he could, because you're just taking that life, you know? So it's, I don't know why I think because know that Lucky's not well and my feelings about that, and just appreciating, you know, when you love someone, you want to make their life the best that you can, you know? And I started thinking about Swamiji. I just had this thought, yeah, that's how he was toward everybody, toward everything. You know, how can I, you know, make them happy? And some people that spent their whole life with him, and very devoted to him also, but also with lots of problems and very cranky, you know, they were still cranky when Swamiji died, but he never gave up on them. And probably I'd say, if he's still up there looking down somewhere as Ishwara, he'll never give up. He will never, that's what I understand, that he will never give up on you, you know? And I saw him never give up. I mean, 20, 30, 40 years, you know, of people who had, like we all have problems, but some have more serious problems. You didn't think about it that way, you just said, you know, sometimes you have to be very patient. And he would say sometimes in satsang and smile, he would say it and smile, I'm very patient. I'm very patient, and give a very long rope. And then he would smile. Yeah. But it's amazing. I mean, we have to, you can't, the thing is about this knowledge, you're all mamukshas, you're all maturing, I mean, myself included, we're all gaining this knowledge and blossoming in this knowledge. You cannot stop that process. It's not like you can say, okay, I've had enough, I don't think we're going to do this anymore. You can't, because it's dharma. It's dharma. You're naturally, all of your instincts, all of your desires are pushing for that absolute fullness, you know, of expression. The absolute fullness of expression of your being, That's what the upadhi wants. That's what the universe wants. So whenever you are up against an edge, that unfoldment, that natural unfoldment toward fullness, or being as your heart as big as Ishwara, is pushing against something, you know? And there's like an isolation, a little kind of a frustration there until that thing breaks open, and then that particular issue, whatever it is, you don't even notice anymore because it's not a problem. Then I remember, as the years would go by, all of us would say in one way or another, as we would talk to each other, "Well, I remember I used to have that problem." I haven't thought about that for a long time. Because at some point, whatever the issue is, drops off. And once it drops off, you don't think about it anymore. And then somehow you remember, I used to have that. That used to be an issue. That used to be an issue for me. Wow. So these things go dropping off and dropping off and dropping off. It's a beautiful journey, you know. It's a beautiful journey. I'm just saying it doesn't stop until everything is dropped off. Yeah. That's Ishwara. That's not your choice. It's not your choice. It's not my choice. I don't think it's so much our choice either, how fast things drop off in light of your knowledge, or even gaining nishta, gaining clarity, getting the antakarna shuddhi. Swamiji used to say it's like a flower unfolding, you know, like a rose, how a rose flower unfolds. You can't take the little bud and pull it open, like a little child might want to do. You end up with this poor little crippled rose, you know. You have to let it, you have to kind of enjoy that process of maturing, enjoy the process of your mind becoming more caring and more loving and more compassionate, and, you know. And you just enjoy it. You enjoy that process and help it along. You know? And sometimes something happens that makes you reflect on it. That's what happened to me, and that's why I wanted to share that, because it's very special. Lucky's also a very special dog. He had Swamiji's blessings, you know. He had Swamiji gave his blessing and petted him. Where's Swamiji?
Well, Lucky has very remarkable eyes.
Yeah, he does, and he stayed at the temple, and we always prayed to Nandi for him, that he would be protected, because he was so bad from other people's eyes, running into the, sleeping at the temple and running to the lecture hall. You know, it's quite a, but to me it's that he was, just took this birth, some sort of a little mumukshu that had to live, go through a dog life.
Well, he sat out there for Upadesha on the veranda.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting when you see the animals that actually come to an ashram where it's like Swamiji was.
Yeah.
And, you know, and how, especially the ones that end up just kind of living there and hanging around. They're interesting. They have interesting karma.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, an interesting birth. And a dog's life or a cat's life is only, it's not that long, you know. Like bigger dogs, they may live 10 or 12 years, smaller dogs, maybe they'll live, if they're lucky, we're lucky, 20 years or something, but that's not very long. They've taken this dog birth or this animal birth for some purpose, you know, to exhaust some karma. And so, Lucky's part of my karma, part of the ashram karma. It's very interesting, it's a very beautiful being for those who get to know it. I was thinking Ramana had Lakshmi the cow. Yeah. They had a very beautiful relationship and took Lakshmi very seriously also. As a very blessed cow. Yeah. So I feel that way about our animals. If we have an animal and you're devoted to this knowledge, you know, this animal's with you. Why would they be with you? They could be with somebody else, but they're with you and you're with them. So there's a shared karma there. You know? Even though they're not, as an animal, they're not accruing karma in an animal birth. They're exhausting karma. But they're exhausting it with you. You know? And then they're also bringing a lot of joy into your life. which animals do. So it's very special, you know. And also we learn so much. Everybody who has animals learns a lot from animals, just because of their purity. They don't carry anything, you know. They just respond and then they move on. Yeah. I'm glad to see you the next minute, even though you were grouchy on it. Anyway. Mm-hmm. That's it. Mm-hmm. And we have our Tibby. Oops.
Was that Tibby?
Yeah. Is that her? Om Swastik Prajabhyah Paripalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahim Mahishaha Kotramane Vyashivamastu Nityam Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu Kale Varshatu Parjanyah Prithivi Sasya Shalini Desho Yamcho Barahitaha Dvamana Santu Nirbhayaha Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha Sarve Santu Niramayaha Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu Ma Kaschit Dukkha Bhag Bhavet Asato Ma Sadgamaya Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya Mrityor Ma Amritam Gamaya Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Hari Om Om. Oh, what's this? Meeting handoff failed. Mm-hmm. Error code. I don't know what that's about. Can you all still hear me? No, but a lot of people left. Jagadish can. Okay. Good. Okay, everybody. I'm messing things up here again. Yeah?
All the Tibby screws gone.
I'll give her some in a minute. She said already all hit. Okay, everybody. Did you call it a minute?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's it. Please say prayers for Lucky and for your all other animals. Give them a little energy boost with our well wishes. Okay. Night, everybody. Oh, there's the
I was reminded of the experience that people had.
Oh, you can put it away. Yeah.
Around Ramana, and they would always talk about how much.